8 of Scholarly Peers podcast. I'm your host today, Sin Wang, and joining me today is Dr. Tracy Zhou from the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Welcome, Tracy.
Oh, thank you, Sin Wang. Very nice meeting you. My name is Tracy. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Educational Administration and Policy at Chinese University of Hong Kong. Hello to everyone.
Okay, thank you very much, Tracy. Can you start by telling us a little bit about your experience in journal peer review, maybe your different roles?
Yeah, I have been an author, a reviewer, and also an associate editor for the International Journal for Academic Development for some years. So I'm also on the editorial board for a few other journals, but the most substantial editing role is with the International Journal for Academic Development.
Can you share a little bit about your role as an associate editor of the journal? Because I know that the roles of associate editor vary across journals. So can you tell us a little bit more about your associate editorship?
Pretty much, I need to manage the whole editorial process. So we have a screening editor who will do the first level screening. And then we as associate editor, not just me, a few of us, will need to make this first decision on whether this manuscript is worth sending out for review. If it is, we need to select reviewer that matches the expertise, matches between the expertise of the reviewer and the article. And then we need to monitor the whole process. When reviewers come back, we need to make judgment based on the review and also our professional judgment. And we communicate with authors or reviewers if necessary. Finally, we actually make a decision. So I know this is a bit different from some other associate editor roles that do not oversee the entire process.
Yeah, I think that's why I ask about it, because I'm also an associate editor of two journals. At one journal, I'm like you, I make the editorial decision on my own, whereas the other one, you make a recommendation to the editor-in-chief, and then the editor-in-chief will make the decision. So it's good that you share a little bit about this with us. So can we talk a little bit about your peer review experiences? And I'm focusing on those unforgettable moments, and it's up to you how you interpret the word unforgettable. It could be positive or negative, or other guests have other interpretations. So let's start with your role as an author first. So do you have any unforgettable peer review experiences to share with us?
Yes, I have. One unforgettable experience is associated with a journal in higher education, in the field of higher education. I received 3 reviews for my manuscript with some contradictory opinions. So the 3 reviewers pointed out 3 different directions, and it's almost impossible to satisfy all of them. But very fortunately, the editor guided me through and pointed out which direction would better align with their journal objectives. So I think that guidance is extremely valuable. I quickly revised and submitted accordingly, and finally it was accepted. I feel this experience unforgettable because sometimes authors do need some advice on the direction, especially when they receive very different opinions. Not every editor would provide that advice. So I found that experience unforgettable.
I think that's very helpful, because sometimes we're trying to guess what the editors want from us, right? And it's very helpful for the editor to point you to the right direction, the preferred direction. That's very, very, very kind of him or her. So how about as a peer reviewer or an associate editor, do you have any unforgettable experience reviewing a manuscript or overseeing the peer review process of a manuscript?
I guess I would share an unforgettable experience when I was serving as associate editor. So at one time, I tried to invite reviewers for a manuscript, but I sent over 10 invitations to scholars that I think are having the right expertise. However, none of them agreed to review. So I had to use my own professional network, begging some former collaborators to help in the review. So I guess the lesson learned is that sometimes it's really difficult for editors to get reviewers to agree, especially in the COVID pandemic time that everyone is so occupied. And another possibly lesson learned I got from this process is that the abstract of your article is really important. I think some reviewers in their reply to me say that they make decision based on whether the abstract makes them feel intrigued or interested. So I guess if you don't have an abstract containing some interesting new findings or new messages, the likelihood for you to get your manuscript reviewed might be reduced, because perhaps the editor is also struggling to find a good reviewer for your manuscript.
I think that's a very interesting point. So far, you're the first one to mention this point about writing an appealing and attractive abstract, because I agree, as a peer reviewer, you know, I look at the abstract and see whether it's within my area of expertise and, you know, whether it's of high quality. I try to make an informed judgment before devoting my time to reviewing it. So I think that's a very helpful piece of advice. I wonder if there are other reasons why editors are quite, it's quite a challenge for editors to find reviewers. I mean, you mentioned some like COVID, and of course the abstract is another factor. From your experience, what may be other reasons why it's so hard to find peer reviewers these days?
I guess it's a structural matter. It's not like any individual's problem. I guess it's just too many manuscripts and not enough reviewers. Maybe that's one thing. Another thing is the expertise matching. I'm a qualitative researcher, so myself will be very hesitant to review a quantitative manuscript, because I just want to be ethical and responsible. If I don't have the right expertise, I might make the wrong recommendation. So when I try to match expertise, I particularly look at the whether it's qualitative, quantitative, or perhaps a mixed method study. I think that also matters. Another thing may be different time of the year. So if you try to get reviewers during the Christmas season or some particular season, to some reviewers, it will be especially challenging. And also in our editorial system, perhaps you could also see that we could know by clicking on some buttons and how many manuscripts this reviewer has already reviewed in the current year. We could get that information. So I'm quite careful selecting reviewers with not so heavy workload at the moment to increase the chance to get him or her agree to review.
I think that's very, very good observation. And I think it's always hard to find not just reviewers, but good reviewers, reviewers who are able to provide very constructive feedback. All right, so let's, I'd like to ask another question actually about your peer review though, because you talked about your experience as an associate editor. I'm very intrigued to know a little bit more about how you go about doing review. So when you accept an invitation, you read the manuscript and you start composing the report, what's the whole process? Would you mind guiding us through how you go about doing it?
That's quite personal. I guess I have my own approach, which may not be the best one, but I'm happy to share. So I focus a lot on the overall significance or contribution to the field. So I don't go to the technical details first. I look at whether there is something new I didn't know and that I could learn from this manuscript, or whether it makes a substantial contribution or new contribution to the field. And if that's a yes, I then look at whether the manuscript is well written and is there anything I could help or enhance by my suggestion. And the second so-called process I'm taking is to see whether it is savable. Being savable, meaning my suggestions could help elevate the manuscript within a reasonable amount of time and with a reasonable amount of effort from the author. If that's okay, then that's another tick that I would tend to offer a more positive recommendation, because that's a manuscript with significant contribution and it could be reasonably enhanced. Mm-hmm. However, if a manuscript is very well written, technically sound, but the contribution to me is limited, I tend to be a little bit strict, because I feel my suggestions couldn't really elevate the manuscript and the contribution is not there. So that's my own personal process.
That's I think that's very, very helpful. I mean, thinking about priorities and what you value most. And as you said, of course, it's your own approach, but it's always good to hear what experienced reviewers do in the process. So thank you very much. Going back in time a little bit, maybe, to think about when you started getting involved in peer review, how did you learn to navigate the peer review process? Who taught you? Did somebody tell you or teach you, or how did you learn about doing it as an author and as a peer reviewer? I mean,
I guess there was no formal learning. It's very much based on experience, based on how other reviewers review my manuscript. And I always feel very encouraged if there are constructive comments, and I could be hurt if there are very harsh comments. So I kind of learned this mentality. When I write my review, I try to be as constructive as possible. By constructive, I mean I try to give actionable suggestions that please consider using this framework, or please consider reorganizing the discussion into like two more sections. Actionable suggestions, I found will be most useful compared to very vague direction, like be more organized, be more systematic. So that's, I guess, it's really learning from my own experiences. So many reviews I've seen, and there are definitely some that I benefit from most. There are also some others I feel not so beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So maybe I would ask you this. So do you remember the first time you submitted a manuscript? Can you share with us that story, that narrative? How did you feel, and how did you go through the whole process, and what happened eventually?
My first experience was actually very good. I was surprised. At that time, I was a PhD student many years ago, and I thought I wouldn't be successful in my first manuscript. And I submitted, and actually, it's not, I guess my manuscript and the journal aims did not match very well. I kind of maybe chose not the most appropriate journal, but still the reviews coming back saying that, oh, this is something very new, and this is something making contribution to our journal, and this is something we haven't published. So somehow the reviews are still very constructive, even if the reviewers point out this is probably not the usual manuscript we published. And amazingly, I was selected as one of the best papers of that year, and I was invited to London to attend an event about the best paper presentation. But I wasn't selected as the best paper. I was the first runner-up. But anyway, I still feel that's an amazing experience for a new new scholar, a PhD student.
Well, so your first submission got you a first runner-up, so that's very, very positive experience. I wonder if you have faced or still facing some challenges when you undergo the process, both as a reviewer and an author.
Oh, there are still a lot of challenges. And some people say, oh, they've published like a lot of papers, so they feel it very easy, very natural. I never felt so. To me, every paper is new. Every process is like the first process. So I treasure every encounter or every experience. I guess one of the challenges almost every researcher faces is time. It seems that it's taking longer and longer for us to receive the peer review outcomes. So especially for early career researcher, time is not our friend. So I could fully understand, and I still feel so, that it's anxious to wait for the peer review results. Another challenge, not happening very often to me at the current stage. Maybe I learned how to write the abstract a bit better, but previously I often received reviews that I can clearly see the reviewer not from a similar field or not from a qualitative stream. So for qualitative researcher, one of the challenges is our paper being reviewed by quantitative researcher. That's not the worst issue. The worst issue is then we were evaluated using quantitative criteria. So I think that's a challenge, but I didn't meet that challenge very often now. I guess one thing is I made quite clear in my abstract or in the methodology that this is a qualitative contribution. And perhaps I also learned how to select journal more appropriately, so I avoid those traps. But in early days, it's indeed a struggle for me.
Yeah, I think that's something you pick up along the way when you submit more and you kind of learn from more reviewers' reports where are the good places to submit certain types of research. I think this is something that you learn from experience. Another challenge I can think of now is that for some of the PhD students, they may be thinking about submitting to like the journal in the field or, you know, some very reputable journals in the field, but at the same time thinking about, who am I? You know, why would my manuscript be selected for publication? You know, that imposter syndrome that we always talk about. And I know that you have published in some of the top journals in higher education and in other fields as well. I wonder what gave you that confidence to say, let's try higher education, for example. What gave you that push?
I guess good research will lead to good outcomes. So before thinking which journal I'm going to target, I think I want to do good research. I want to do the research that I feel could really make some advancement, maybe not big advancement, but still something that I'm proud of. So in every research project, I guess you can figure out there are some parts that you can turn it into a very substantial piece of work, making good contribution. And there are some side learning, lesson learned, or that there are some maybe side projects associated with your big project that they may offer some relatively small contributions. So I guess I pick up the most substantial chunk of my work and then write a paper for the high impact journal like Higher Education Studies in Higher Education. But for some of the side projects or for some of the niche area, perhaps I turn it into another format and submitting to different journals or more focused journals. I guess this is from my mentor when I was much younger. He told me that don't think about the journal at the first place. Think about your research and what would you like to find out and whether your findings, to what extent your findings make a contribution. If that's solid, good journals will ultimately be your friend.
I think that's very, very good suggestion. I mean, thinking about your own research in the first place, the quality, contribution, originality, not thinking about the esteem or the prestige of the journal in the first instance. I think that's very helpful because I know a lot of doctoral students, for example, listening, they will be thinking about where to submit or whether they should submit to that particular journal. And I think your advice helps them a lot. As we are on the topic of supporting doctoral students, thinking about the difficulties of doctoral students or early career researchers, I wonder if you have any suggestions about supporting early career researchers or doctoral students in a peer review process. I mean, from what I heard, your experience has been quite positive in general, and you got encouraging feedback, you got good feedback to model on, and you know, but for some students, they may not be that smooth in terms of the journey. I wonder what kinds of support can be provided to them.
It sounds positive just because I didn't talk about many harsh comments I also received. So overall, I think it's a balanced experience. I have received very, very harsh comments, some unreasonable ones, but I also had received very, very positive, encouraging comments. So if you ask me to make a calculation, I would say it's more or less balanced. And for the support, I want to say that I admire your podcast series and your blogs. I think you organize this and kind of create a community, that's already a big contribution to the peer review so-called community, because researchers are often feeling very lonely. Even if we have colleagues, we have friends, we have supporters, in our own specific area, we are still alone doing our own explorations. So your community building, I think, is already the first step to support early career researchers. So in this, using your platform, probably we can do more sharing, just as this podcast. And also perhaps over the time, I learned not to take rejections personally. It's hard. As I said, every process to me is the first process. It's the new process. It's so easy to blame ourselves for a bad consequence, but understanding that it's influenced by many factors will make us be more resilient and persistent. So never take rejections personally.
I think that's something we sometimes we understand cognitively and rationally, but I mean, when we face that, when we are reading that rejection letter, sometimes it still hurts. But I mean, we'll get better at it as we, you know, I mean, along the way. I've asked this question to all of my guests about the kind of formal support and more informal support. What you mentioned earlier about the community, it's of course more informal. It's a friendly community with peers sharing their experiences. I wonder if you think there is value in a more structured, formal support, for example, like training or workshops or even courses provided by university graduate schools or publishers. Do you think they are useful to new peer reviewers?
I haven't thought this through. I think they are definitely useful for new authors. But whether it's useful for peer reviewers, I think it would be useful, but it would be a bit difficult to motivate people to join because reviewers are not paid. They are, the only way they get rewarded is perhaps to read editor's decision. I mean, sometimes, say in our journal, International Journal for Academic Development, we always share our final decision and all reviewers comment to a particular manuscript to the reviewers who provided their professional advice. So that's the rewarding part. You can see whether you share similar opinion with peer review, with the other peer reviewer. I'm thinking for a formal structure, formal course modules to benefit peer reviewers, we probably need to think more about incentives or whether that part could be combined with the author development sessions. Recently, I indeed noticed more and more journals organizing webinars, sharing sessions, talking about their journal aims, process, welcoming authors and answering potential authors' questions. I think that is motivating because authors definitely want to know what the journal editors are thinking. But why peer reviewers who are authors at the same time, why are they motivated to join a formally organized session? I'm still thinking about that, but I don't object to the idea. I think it's having potential, but how to wisely organize it in a way that's motivating, interesting, and rewarding, I haven't got an answer yet.
Right. Okay. I think it's interesting what you said, because it relates to the mindset of peer reviewers. You asked the question, why would peer reviewers want to attend those training sessions? And that to me suggests that peer reviewers are thinking maybe why training is necessary for me to provide feedback. Because, for example, I am an expert. I'm not talking about myself, but you know, the reviewer is supposed to be an expert in that area. So I already know the knowledge and I have everything I need to compose my report. Why do I need additional training? What the training is for? Is it for providing feedback or, you know, whatever? I mean, so that's actually quite interesting to me to think about the mindsets of peer reviewers, whether they want help or whether they think they're thinking, I'm doing a pretty decent job. Why do I need additional training? So I think that's quite interesting as well. Right. So to round off our conversation, can you think of any advice that you would give to early career researchers or doctoral students who are maybe thinking about submitting their first manuscript to a journal? We touched on that earlier about that high impact journals, but in general, do you have other advice for ECRs, for doctoral students?
Yeah, I consider myself as ECR. So a piece of so-called advice I would give to others and myself is having your manuscript read by at least one person not on the author team. I feel that's really useful. I just did that and I received feedback from a friend who is my collaborator, but who didn't write that paper with me. And I found just having someone taking a look at it, even not a detailed reading, but just having a brief look at it, helping me so much, because I was so immersed in the writing process. I guess many ECRs are, because we really want to get this done. And we probably, maybe I probably didn't see, oh, there is an assumption underpinning my manuscript, and I feel so taken for granted. I feel there is no need to explain it at all, as it's so obvious, but it's not obvious to someone who hasn't been involved in this research process. So it's just my experience. Actually, yesterday night, I received a critical friend's comment that helps me completely rewrite the first paragraph of my introduction. And now I feel it's becoming so much better. Of course, we don't know whether it's better or not until it's formally reviewed. But still, I feel having someone help at this level is very helpful.
I think that's very useful advice. And sometimes we're so afraid to ask for help because it's the notion of getting rejected, you know, people saying no to our requests. But I think it's very helpful to have critical friends around you. And it ties with the idea that you shared earlier about building a community. And I think this is also part of the community that extends beyond peer reviewers, and, you know, have your colleagues or your collaborators. So thank you very much, Tracy, today for sharing with us your experiences, advice, and most importantly, to help us build the community that you talked about earlier. So thank you very much, Tracy.
Thank you so much.